All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It is Tuesday night, and we are here launching that tweet. And we are here for another night of college football talk with RCFB Talk 35. My name is Bob Akhayeri. I'm going to be joined by Sirius, and our friend JD is actually out for the evening. He's got a bit of grad school, even though he's an older gentleman. Some people want to go back to school. But as always, we want to hear from you. Let me go ahead and invite my co-host. There we go. So we love to hear from you. We love to talk college football, whatever areas you want to speak about. Just feel free to hit request and we will let you up. But other than that, oh, it looks like we have a request already. Or did it look like, well, anyways, technical difficulties there. A lot of stuff, going on, even though it's not quite as busy as it was in the past few weeks. Last week we had SRS. Are you able to join us now?
Yeah, I'm here. I only had to, hit accept three times.
Yeah, no
Always fun
worries.
with the apps. I'm definitely telling JD that you called him an older gentleman, though.
Well, I mean, compared to most who go to school, he's actually older than I was when I went to grad school. So, yeah, I don't know. Well, if you didn't join us last week, we had Bo Pelini on and his son. That was really interesting. Talked a little bit about his new podcast, which is worth listening to. We enjoyed it. I haven't had a chance to listen to the second episode, but they just launched it, so it wouldn't be long to catch up. We didn't get a chance to talk to many callers, so that's what we're hoping to do today. So again, if you want to join us, feel free to hit request. We'd love to talk to you and hear what you want to talk about. Now, Sirius, what struck you this week so far?
I mean, there's been some interesting headlines. I thought, the one probably that got a lot of attention was Ohio State's estimate on how much NIL money they needed to, quote unquote, keep their roster together.
Yeah,
That's something,
$13 million.
right? That's
And that provoked some interesting discussion. I mean, people were having fun coming up with the commercials that Ohio State might run to try and convince donors, for just a few monthly payments of $10,000, you too can help support Ohio State football and the players it need. I think that was International Tax was the user who said that. But I really enjoyed people coming up with other ideas for what to show during the commercial, like a dejected Ohio State player getting into like a Honda while a Michigan State player was getting into a Mercedes or something like that to try and get those donors to fork over money, and maybe that's something we should ask too. If any of you guys have ideas, it doesn't have to be for Ohio State, but comical, or maybe semi-serious ideas for how to get donors to fork over now the millions it's going to take to allegedly keep some of these rosters together, or maybe give a team that might otherwise not be competing against, Ohio State or the other blue bloods a chance to rise up. What kind of
I heard one user was like, can we just like pull in together and just like pick a team at random? I think they actually use like Vanderbilt, but like a UConn or somebody like that. It's usually more kind of hapless. Can we just like all band together?
Let's make Indiana the next Big Ten champion by buying every player on the planet. Like, people who shouldn't even be playing for Indiana because they don't even, they're not even remotely connected to it, but they're coming for that cold hard NIL cash.
Exactly. Just, like they're like, can we just like crowdfund this? And someone replied, like, I think you just invented a pack. So yeah, we're just kind of reinventing the wheel at this point.
So we got a couple of requests to talk. So Bobber, thanks for your patience. We'd love to talk to you.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I just have to mute my TV really fast because I'm suffering watching the Rangers right now, but that's beside the point. So yeah, really been enjoying what you guys have been doing over the past however long since the page has been a thing. But I want to ask you guys a question. I'm a Penn State alum and a huge Penn State fan, and I know Coach Franklin's gotten a lot of flack over the years for 11-11 and all that kind of stuff. And yes, one of them was a pandemic year, and not making excuses, injuries decimated the team last year. And where do you see the trajectory of the Penn State program going with good recruiting classes, you know, over the next few years? And what kind of impact do you think they need to have this year? Like maybe a 9-win season or a 10-win season to prove last year was sort of a mirage?
You know, I think personally they need to get a little bit more production out of the offense. I believe Sean Clifford, the quarterback, still there, so he's going to have to step up a bit. But I mean, I think last year was awkward only because of that whole, you know, because James Franklin, I think to an extent, his agent is very skilled at getting him, you know, a better paycheck. So I think that was awkward to, you know, start out great. You know, go 5-0, get a huge paycheck booster extension after, you know, you were either seriously or probably, you know, semi-seriously flirting with that USC job that suddenly came vacant. And then, you know, to finish the season, you know, 2-6, that wasn't the greatest follow-up to that. So that made things, I think, a bit more awkward in at Penn State. But I mean, I think they've built enough. I don't know if they're going to – how high they're going to challenge this year. I think, obviously, Ohio State and Michigan are right now looking like they're going to be as close to being the top two as they were the previous year. And Michigan State is also out there, but they, of course, I think to an extent also had sort of a similar hiccup after a huge extension for their head coach like Penn State did. But I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be – shouldn't have a chance to break through, if not this year, but at least be solid. I mean, now as far as where they would finish in terms of total wins, that's a different question. Sirius, what do you think?
I mean, having, you know, been a fan of a James Franklin coach team, recruiting is his strength. Motivation is his strength. A lot of it really depends on his coordinators. You know, he's lost some talent there. Both the Virginia Tech, the Michigan, the past few years. So I think that's really where you'll see like the difference maker come through is how good of a job has he done finding the successors for those positions. Sometimes he hangs on to guys too long. Sometimes, you know, when he finally gets rid of them, he makes a great hire. So it really just depends on that because he's not really an X's and O's kind of guy. I think he's probably pretty desperate to kind of justify that contract. I mean, they gave him a massive extension, so they're kind of stuck with him. He's got a couple of years worth of cushion there before they can realistically, I mean, unless a booster just goes crazy, you know, try to start putting pressure on him that, you know, maybe his time there has come to an end. There were some people who were criticizing the contract because, yeah, he does the thing he always does and he flirts with a Texas or a USC or, you know, somebody who's got deep pockets. And he's been doing that for like 10 years now. But realistically, you know, who was Penn State going to go out and get that's got a proven track record? You know? So he's got a bit of a safety net there, in my opinion. But I think he needs to get back to at least a 9-win season. And I can't imagine there's many people in the Big Ten that would be more excited to get rid of divisions than James Franklin. If that's going to be, you know, on the table for the next, you know, sometime in the next couple of years with the new NCAA rules.
You know, I'm interested to see how Manny Diaz does as his defensive coordinator. I think that's going to be interesting to see if, you know, because he's got to want to prove himself again after that whole fiasco, how Miami kind of, well, I mean, that infamous way Miami kind of, you know.
Making his return to Pennsylvania.
Yeah. But,
Longtime coach of Temple.
So how do you, I mean, and I apologize, I keep using your username, Bobber, but how do you think, how do you feel about Penn State heading into this season since you brought him up?
Oh man, I'm kind of torn because I am a big fan of the talent that they're bringing in. And I know that Penn State isn't a program that usually relies on the transfer portal, but the three guys they pulled out of the portal this offseason, home run, and home run. Mitchell Tinsley, Demion Robinson, and Hunter Norzad. And they address those positions of need, and I think those guys are going to be immediate contributors on their respective sides of the ball. And I think with Coach Yurcich actually being there for a second year, that since Sean Clifford's been the starter, he's had a different offensive coordinator each year. So this is the first time in his career, albeit his sixth year, he'll actually have an offensive coordinator when he's starting for more than a year. The biggest problem, I think, is the offensive line. If the offensive line returns to serviceable, which is what they were during the Big Ten championship year and the year after, if they return to serviceable, there's no reason why this can't be a 9 or 10 win team. But if the offensive line goes back to what it was last year, I'd say another 7 or 8 win season.
I think that's reasonable. Well, we really appreciate it. Thanks for calling. A lot of people have been
Yeah,
and by the way, just before I move on to the next call, I just wanted to say one of the, you know, whenever I hear about a player, a quarterback going through multiple, you know, offensive coordinators, I always remember the end of my own, you know, college tenure years and years ago, I watched, you know, Carson Palmer come in as this quarterback who was supposed to be great. He got a start as a true freshman, which was a big deal. Didn't do that great, kept kind of underperforming or getting injured, and kept getting a new offensive coordinator every couple of years. And then it was when he had Norm Chow for two solid years that we suddenly got, you know, the surprise, which at the time was a surprise Heisman season. I mean, when he won the Heisman back in 2002, that was not something anyone would have guessed at the beginning of the season. He was just sort of like a quarterback who seemed serviceable. He was built right. And then next thing you know, halfway through the season when there was sort of a push, like, you know, out of nowhere, the university's like, oh, whoa, we might have a Heisman candidate here. So sometimes that happens. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, Sean Clifford's going to be your Heisman winner at the end of the season, but sometimes you do see, it's amazing what then suddenly an otherwise talented quarterback with some steady coaching behind them and consistency can improve and show off what they can really do.
And I'd say, like, going back for most of Franklin's tenure as head coach, quarterbacks and offensive line have been two areas that have had some pretty rough results as well. You know, Josh Gattis kind of helped turn things around for Penn State for a little while, but then, you know, he moves out and you got to find the guy to replace him. So I think that, you know, if you've got the right guy there, yeah, you can have a pretty good team, but, you know, that's always the big question with Franklin, because he's not an X's and O's guy. He really depends on the quality of those assistants.
Hey, Cole, thanks for joining us. We'd love to hear from you.
I was wondering, I'm an NC State alum and a big fan. I was just wondering, should we be believing in the hype this year? Is it, like, NC State media driven? I just want to hear what outsiders are saying about us this year or this upcoming year.
Well, there's definitely, I mean, I've seen the hype that's coming out of sort of the national media. I mean, obviously Clemson is still a strong program, and some have even put, obviously, even though I'm a little skeptical about how Pittsburgh's going to do without Kenny Pickett, obviously that's a huge thing. I mean, I know they have Slovis from USC, and they have some other quarterbacks on their roster, so that one is a little more up in the air. Wake Forest could be good as well. But I don't think there's any reason to not. I mean, I don't know if there, other than Clemson, if there's any safe bet for contenders in the ACC. And I might be wrong on that, but I could see why, you know, they're returning a quarterback. That's big. They've got, I think they've got some good receivers, and they had a good defensive, they're able to hold defenses to reasonable amount. I mean, offenses to a reasonable amount with their D. So I think there's a reasonable chance for them. I mean, and maybe that's also because the ACC isn't as certain as some of the other conferences. What do you think, Sirius?
I think that the ACC on paper is probably as open as it's been since Clemson kind of started this streak. Obviously, last year probably wouldn't have expected as big of a drop for Clemson as we saw. But going into this one, I mean, I know my Clemson friends tell me that it's addition by subtraction with Tony Elliott going to UVA. But then at the same time, I feel like you got to think that the move for Brent Venables, losing him, losing some staffers to Oklahoma, that probably outweighs the impact, you know, if Tony Elliott was holding your offense back, that kind of mindset. So if this is going to be the year, if you got a chance at it, you kind of have to make the moves you need in order to be competitive. Because otherwise, yeah, I think it's pretty wide open. You got a lot of several new coaches that are going to need some time to get their feet under them. Teams that were contenders that lost a lot of talent, like Pittsburgh. So if this is going to be the year for NC State, it's looking pretty optimistic, you know, in terms of potential roadblocks. But I mean, NC State fans and hope, right? Like, it's a dangerous combination, especially whenever the NCAA is involved.
And, you know, and they do, I had to double check, they return a lot of folks on defense too. So that's going to be potentially a really big strength for them. Defense does win championships. I mean, but that's a stereo. That's a cliche. Man, I'm looking at that non-conference. East Carolina. I mean, they should win. NC State should win, but that's going to be. And I think anybody taking on ECU is always a little bit nervous, especially in the Carolinas, because that's they just want to prove themselves desperately each and every time. So that'll be a fun way to start the season, I can imagine. But thanks for the call. By the way, Cole, before we leave you off, what do you think? I've been really curious to hear more about what some of our callers think about their team. Because I know, as you said, you're in your kind of in the NC State bubble. But what are your personal thoughts on how they're going to do?
I think, you know, I agree with the ECU and the whole NC State and hope thing that was mentioned before. But, you know, I think, like you said, it's our year. Luckily, I think, you know, Clemson still – in my opinion, a little bit of question marks at the quarterback, and we're getting them, I think, game five. So that's earlier the better, I guess, per se, with, you know, the two coordinators coming in and everything. So, you know, I'm hoping for ACC championship, but once again, hoping NC State. You can't really put those two together.
Yeah. Well, hey, Cole, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right, let's see here. Crash Norriston, what's up? We'd love to hear from you.
What's up, guys? I appreciate the ACC and the Big Ten football talk prior, but I'm here to talk about a few things that are just a little more important to me, and that is the Kansas Jayhawks. I am an alum myself, and I've been a fan for as much as I can be over the past decade plus that we've been irrelevant, but I just wanted to come on here and discuss that over 2.5 wins this year, it has got to be a lock. I think that Leipold's got these boys fired up this year. Program's heading in the right direction. We've got a pretty easy-ish non-con. I mean, we start with, like, Tennessee Tech. You'd like to think that we could chalk that up as a win, but, I mean, you really never know. And then we got Duke, which is on the schedule. It was a close game at Duke last year. So I think that, I don't know, again, Lawrence isn't the biggest football hub in the country, but, you know, a little home advantage might lock that up for the second win. And then, I mean, everybody knows that we've got Texas's number, so chalk it up for 3. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, man. You know, I think... I've been a huge fan of Coach Leipold, you know, ever since he was at Whitewater, only because when I first really got into understanding the lower divisions, that was when you had that, I don't even know how to call it, like a duopoly domination of Mount Union and Wisconsin Whitewater. So I remember when he went to Buffalo and I'm like, wow, that's a bold pick to go to D3 for your next head coach. That isn't a very common selection, but he seemed, well, he was clearly hungry to try something at a bigger level, and then Buffalo was desperate, and he made it at least enough of a waves there. And I was impressed that Kansas was willing to then take that risk. But I think after, you know, what seemed like an incredible splashy hire with Les Miles and how that all kind of burned out, it was time to try something a little different. So I think he's been building the right program. I mean, Kansas doesn't look hapless anymore. And you're right. I think over 2 wins is reasonable. I don't know how many more. I think what we're going to be mostly looking for is improvement. Do they start maybe squeezing in a few surprises here and there? I think Duke is just completely in total recovery and reorganization mode. So that should be a safer win, safer chance for a win, particularly at home. Obviously, Tennessee Tech probably wouldn't. You know, although, you know, if I'm an FCS program, if I'm their head coach and I want to hype my team up, and, you know, any win over an FBS team is big, let alone a P5 team. And, you know, Kansas is still a P5 program. So I think they will still come in, you know, the first game of the season, guns blazing. But I think Kansas will handle that. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how much improvement is made there. I mean, what do you think, Sirius?
I think they can win against Tennessee Tech. I mean, it's not like you're playing East Tennessee State now, you know. talking about FCS teams that have knocked off P5, technically P5 opponents. I agree that with these kind of hires, and especially when you take over a program like a Kansas or, you know, my own Vanderbilt, you know, those kind of programs that have really struggled historically, at least in the past 10 years. I know Kansas went to a BCS bowl, like beyond that. You have to look for that incremental progress. And, you know, it's not we're going to come out, we're going to win six games next season. We're going to come out, we're going to win the games that we're supposed to win, be competitive in the games that are against, you know, like the average teams. And then, you know, okay, we're going to take our thumping against some of the best teams in the conference. Like that's usually how it works. So Tennessee Tech, they should expect to beat them. I think you have to have that mindset. The Texas joke, you know, I knew it was coming. I was expecting it. I still laughed. Everybody loves it when that happens. I don't know if they're going to pull it off this year. We'll see. I think that the Big 12 is just kind of hard to predict, especially, you know, some guys are kind of mixing things up in terms of returning talent. Like Baylor's coming off of a great season. Didn't really add a whole lot of talent in the last signing class, though, so they're kind of stuck with whatever they had. You know, the turnover at Oklahoma, new coach at TCU, Iowa State's got a new quarterback. There's a lot of unknowns this season for the Big 12, so I don't really feel comfortable saying, oh, yeah, you're going to pick up a win here, you're going to pick up a win there. But I think there's the opportunity there that if they get that progress that you're looking for, which with Leipold you should expect based on his track record, you know, he knows how to develop players and develop players who don't have a lot of stars attached to them. If he's making that basic progress, then yeah, I think that it's not unreasonable to expect that he could pull off 3 or maybe 4 wins. Really, a lot of it's just going to depend on what happens with all the other teams that you're facing. You know, same thing with Duke with a new coach, Houston, how their talent's going to be there. Who knows? So I think it's reasonable to hope for the over there. Just, you know, don't get too heartbroken if you win 2 games, but you were competitive in 3 or 4 of them, because I think that's still a good sign for the future.
Yeah, and I would be curious to see if they're competitive in a game someone didn't expect them to be competitive in, which I think is reasonable. I mean, Kansas has done that before and over the seasons. But, I think four would be a good season. If they could win 4, that would be a huge deal, I think, for Kansas, and it would show they were in the right direction beyond what expectations were, which I think is like 2 or 3 wins across the board. I mean, I know both
sides, I would say 4 is a massive success.
It would be a massive success. I think, you know, obviously they had trouble running the ball and stopping the run last year. So that would be a big part of it. I mean, that Duke game is going to be really interesting, because Duke is a team that's just trying to rebuild from the ground up after, you know, kind of just sort of a downwards trajectory. They hung on a little bit too long there when they should have probably changed coaches. But Kansas is then should be the stronger team, with one that is building up and is a little bit more prepared this season.
I will add real quick that this is just a rumor in the KU bubble, but apparently Kansas is trying to get out of this Houston game at Houston, being that they are supposed to be coming into the Big 12 sometime, I think, in the next 2 years. But I know we're really trying to get that out of our non-con. So if we can replace them with an easier opponent, then obviously we could pick up a win there. And I will like kind of reiterate what you said. I think that even last year, if you guys probably all remember the Oklahoma game at KU, where I mean, we were winning pretty much the entire game until Caleb Williams had this crazy fourth down run that ended up giving them a field goal, I believe, to win it. But I think that that's been KU's biggest issue, is that we just cannot close out games, even if they are close. And that's, it used to be due to incompetent coaching, but I'm just hoping that this year Leipold kind of has these guys a little more disciplined and can close out some of those games. Cause it does seem that, like, Texas Tech, usually we're pretty neck and neck with them. Oklahoma, Texas, even though they're obviously way better than Kansas, for some reason, every year, those games are far closer than they should be. Even TCU and Iowa State, I remember in years past, we've had some pretty good games with them. But just wanted to hop on here and kind of get your guys' thoughts. So I appreciate the time.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. I just wanted to, you know, also add, I know Kansas is being, you know, a team that's building up and showing some promise. But as you said, you know, the coaching seems to be there. It's just the team eventually kind of runs out of juice, which is something you sometimes see as a team is still getting better conditioned and maybe even stepping up the athletes. The transfer portal, I think, has been pretty good for Kansas because you have folks who want to get into that higher kind of caliber of P5 program. So I know they've got some players that have come in there. I know they got a transfer from, oh gosh, it was from Miami of Ohio, who's going to be a pretty good person on the defensive line. So, you know, one thing I was thinking, if you're looking, when you were talking about getting out of that Houston game, I don't know if they really are. And I can tell you Houston still likes the idea of having, you know, Kansas come in to their home stadium as a non-conference game this season. Cause that's, you know, I mean, everyone's trying to figure out what would be a win or not, but I could see them, you know, it made me think of, cause they also have Duke on the schedule. Everyone thinks at that time Duke was able to legally argue that they shouldn't be, they weren't anybody, you know, if they canceled the game, there was no worse team that they could have possibly replaced them with, sort of like, so maybe that's what Kansas could try against Houston, but I don't want to subject Kansas to that.
I'm thinking they probably, you know, they're looking at Houston being, you know, it's a home and home with Houston. So using that argument of, well, it's not really going to be a true out of conference game for 2023 if you all are coming in, you know, depending on when they're actually going to make it into the conference, and saying, you know, let's go ahead and cancel this. We'll find different opponents and then go from there.
That's definitely a more compelling argument, although I could see Houston saying, like, well, here we had smart lawyers writing this. Here is the amount of money we owe you for your half. You're still coming to play us. Who knows?
That would be a great way to start off a new, try to develop a new rivalry in your new conference, for sure.
Well, thanks for joining us, Crash. We appreciate that. Let's see here. Ethan, what's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good.
So I want to come in here. I'm just getting into, like, the college football space. Like, I've watched college football, like, my entire life, but I'm just getting into, like, really about the transfer portal, all that kind of stuff. But I have a main question is, I'm an avid Minnesota Gopher fan. We've had so much, like, hype the past couple of years. And the thing is that I'm not buying into the Tanner Morgan. Like, I don't believe he's the guy. But I kind of wanted to see what you guys thought about that, because it's like, anytime I watch him, he always makes one mistake or two mistakes that, like, loses us some games.
Well, one thing is for sure, you know, it never hurts to have another year. We were just talking about that earlier, but, you know, it never hurts for a quarterback to have another year under the same coordinator in the same system. So keeping the same offensive coordinator was huge. And I think that will hopefully show the maturity you see as a quarterback gets more experience and gets more, because I mean, that's always a thing in college, you know, they only do the NCAA rules. They only get so many opportunities. That's why to practice, to get used to a program, to get used to the system and keep getting those important, you know, reps, which is why, for example, teams will take those bowl games that seem otherwise worthless, not because they really care about going to play in, you know, Shreveport. It's because they get that chance, particularly the coaches, to keep their players, you know, practicing and get more reps before the next season. So, you know, that's a huge part of it. So I think at the least Morgan's going to get that. Now, whether that translates into a better season, I'm not sure. And I think that's a big question there. I think Minnesota going into next season is a real big, you know, I don't know where they are. They're probably in the middle of the division, to be honest. I think you're still going to be looking at, you know, looking ahead at Wisconsin. I think they're the favorite in the division. And I'm not sure if I would still feel confident to put Minnesota against ahead of Iowa, or ahead, at least not before the season, whether I put them against Iowa or not sure. I think they're more with like Nebraska and kind of the middle. I don't know where Nebraska is going to be. I really have no idea how Nebraska is going to play. So they're both my two big questions in that division, but that's where I'm at right now. Sirius, what do you think?
You're definitely the Minnesota expert here. I'll just chime in. I think that you're spot on with the Nebraska prediction, or, you know, avoidance of a prediction on them. Who knows? I mean, like, they're kind of like the chaos goblins of the Big Ten West, it feels like. You never know what's going to happen with them week to week, other than that they're probably going to lose if it's 2021, just not by a whole lot. Beyond that, yeah, you know, another year always helps, and some QBs, though, they don't find that level where they can avoid those mental mistakes. They still, you know, tend to fold under pressure. Sometimes that doesn't go away. So it'll be interesting to see if they were able to get it fixed and he comes out, you know, a little bit more polished, a little bit more confident, and not too confident, you know, in crunch time.
Yeah, one thing I will say, as a as Sirius said, I did grad school at Minnesota, so I'm not necessarily like the same fanatical level I was as an undergraduate. But I do have to note that I was sad to hear about the death of Marion Barber III. He was the running back stud who was with the Gophers when I was there, along with Lawrence Mulrooney. That was a heck of a two-headed backfield back there, back when Glenn Mason was a head coach, and then they made that unfortunate transition to that just didn't go anywhere. I don't even want to talk about it. But when Minnesota was a running team, that was when Nebraska was a running team. Remember those days? I'm going to take one quick station identification. You're listening to RCFB Talk 35. My name is Bob Akairi. I'm joined here with Sirius. We were just talking a bit about the Gophers. Well, thanks again, Ethan. Hey, by the way, before you leave, Ethan, give me more about your thoughts about where you think the Gophers are headed this season.
Well, it's kind of like a throw up, because it's like last season, you know, we had that big win and then, you know, getting the axe back, and like, you know, that gives a lot of confidence, but you just never know, because it's like we had the 10-win season, I think, when we beat Auburn and in Outback Bowl, and then we have a lot of confidence, and then we sunk back down to what we usually are around mid level. And I think saying with Nebraska makes me cringe a little bit, because it's like I'm used to seeing Nebraska as like a bottom feeder, but it's like I hope they do well, but I'm also expecting them to be in the middle of the pack as usual.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that all turns out. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, let's see here. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Big fan. I just wanted to say, go Hawks, and I wanted to get your guys' predictions. You know, this is a team that had 10 wins last year with let's face it, a subpar offense at best. But we returned over 75% of the defense, got the number one safety in the class in this year. How much of a step do you think this offense has to take to be another legitimate contender in the Big Ten?
Okay, yeah. So it was so funny for a second. I was like, which Hawks? No. So we've gone from Minnesota to Iowa. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, seeing some improvement on the offense is going to be important for Iowa to get moving this season. I think they averaged something like, they averaged like low 20 points per game. Increasing production there, getting some big plays is always going to be a big factor in getting Iowa to rise up and, as we said, sort of challenge Wisconsin, which seems to be the leader in the division. I mean, they lost some good they lost their center, as I recall. But getting good quarterback play, establishing someone who's going to be a strong person behind the line of scrimmage, as well as getting that running game, is going to be a big factor in you know, becoming a better program and kicking, getting, yeah, sorry, kicking up to that next level. Woof, my tongue is just wanting to do cartwheels here. What do you think, Sirius?
I mean, Brian Ferentz is still there. If you follow the Twitter account, you know that we are huge, huge Brian Ferentz fans. Massive Brian Ferentz fans. Always makes for an entertaining game day. Apparently, Kirk still likes him. Blood's thicker than water, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, if he's going to do what he's been doing, I mean, he kind of hamstrings your offensive potential just by being himself. So, you know, unless Kirk finally, you know, sticks it to him and says, look, you got to change it up. You got to give me something here. Because the defenses at Iowa have been great for most of the Kirk Ferentz's tenure. But the offensive side of it's always been the big question mark. And it's not even like they need to be, you know, 2020 Alabama or 2019 LSU kind of thing. It just needs to really be consistent and score like 25 points a game, 28 points a game, which in 2022 is actually not asking that much. So if they're competent, if they're half competent, then I think that Iowa's chances are pretty good. But I'm always kind of leery. You know, we've seen the product he's put on the field in the past. So he's got to prove to me that they've changed, that they've gotten a little bit more innovative. And it wasn't even a case of personnel, I think. I think they actually had the players that they could have done better. I think a lot of it just came down to play calling.
Yeah, I know, really even looking, on offense. I know,
I'm
even
really
on
looking
offense,
forward to seeing how. Well, sorry, I apologize. Well, the thing I'm fascinated to know is how that Cy-Hawk thing goes. Only because both programs are kind of, I don't know, if you ask me where Iowa State was, I'd be equally confused in what to predict this season. And they both open with FCS programs, you know. But, you know, God knows with the two Iowa schools, they can be strong and still have just an inexplicable, you know, stumble, especially Iowa State when they decide to play an FCS program. But
they don't exactly have a clean sheet when it comes to FCS teams.
But that Cy-Hawk game is going to be really interesting to see how they do. And then otherwise, I mean, Iowa, if they've got it together, they should be pretty strong 4-0 because they got South Dakota State, Iowa State, if they manage to beat a stronger team. Nevada's got a new coach, seems to be, you know, not going to be strong. And then, you know, the first away game is at Rutgers. So it's Rutgers, you know, again, Iowa, I would still take. It's a strong program. I mean, even though I like Shiano, I don't think Rutgers is necessarily going to be a strong one. But then you host Michigan, and so then you're going to get that real big test. But, that's going to be the defining moment for how far Iowa's come, I think, to see how they do there. But, well, I mean, that assumes, though, you know, especially the Iowa State game, which is the big circle for me, is I'd be really curious to see how those two teams do. It's always entertaining to watch that game. You never know what you're going to get. Elastico, as a
last year's game, I thought was really interesting because I was kind of hesitant about Matt Campbell going into it. You know, I didn't really see all of the appeal that, you know, he always gets thrown out for NFL jobs or these big name P5 jobs, that kind of thing. And then last year when, you know, he basically just gave up in the fourth quarter. And that really made me hesitant, you know, in terms of how I consider him in terms of, like, coaching rankings. So now with a new quarterback under center, I'll be curious to see how Iowa State does. Because, man, that was just was – it was not a good look, just basically giving up in a rivalry game that is as intense as it seems Iowa State is, and just say, nope, we're good. You go ahead and win.
So before we take off, Matthew, what do you – well, not take off the show, but I mean, it's before we move on, Matthew, what are your final thoughts about Iowa?
You know, I mean, our opponents in the East are a lot tougher this year with Rutgers, Michigan, Ohio State. Last year, you know, we had Penn State, Maryland, and I don't even remember. So, I mean, that's going to be a big challenge going to the Horseshoe. I mean, pretty much chalk that up as a loss. I know when they came to Kinnick a couple years ago, that was a different story. You could say the same thing with Michigan in 2016. Michigan was a hot team then. You know, Kinnick's not an easy place to play at night. And
I think if Kirk's dogs and Phil Parker's defense does what they do consistently, there's no reason why they can't go 10-4 again.
I was thinking the same thing about Michigan. You know, whenever a Big Ten East team like a Michigan comes into Kinnick, all bets are off. You know, there's weird, funky juju that happens in that stadium that just makes it entirely too hard to predict what is going to happen and what could befoul the visiting team.
It's a great college football environment, and I think that's a big part of it. I mean, I always think that, too. Some of these Big Ten programs, they just have really great environments to go watch football in, and Iowa is definitely one of them.
It's the pink locker room, I think.
Yeah, Hayden Fry's great gift to the legacy of one of their many great sort of quirks that he added. Well, Matthew, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, Duke, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Dogs fan here. I was just wondering, during the UGA spring game, one of the buzz topics that was thrown around is that the potential of us running a three-man tight end scheme with Darnell Washington, Ari Gilbert, and Brock Bowers. And then also I was wondering what your thoughts are on the Dan Lanning hype going into the Oregon Ducks and them open up the season.
Two good questions there. I'll definitely start with the Lanning one, because that's always that, you know, whenever you get that kind of a situation, it's hard not to be curious how they're going to go. I mean, I think the safe bet is always to assume Georgia is going to be, if not the number one, the number two team going in. I know, I think I saw one early top 25 that still managed to put Alabama as number one, but I think Georgia as returning champs will still have a lot of that power going in. All the reason I go ahead and say that is because while, you know, it's neat to see Oregon, you know, with Lanning there, it's still, you know, he's got a team where he's going to be getting them back into, you know, his system. I'm sure that program wasn't entirely thrilled about the way that coaching transition happened. So, you know, and it's going to be in Atlanta. So for all intents and purposes, I think it's going to be neat. It's going to make a great preseason story. I mean, I'm sure sports writers everywhere that have deadlines to meet and articles to file, especially involving those two teams or the national college football scene, are going to really appreciate that sort of a storyline. But for a lot of reasons, I just don't see Oregon necessarily having much of a chance against the Dogs going into that one. Now, as for the scheme, that's interesting. I had a chance to watch Georgia in the title game last year, back in up in the press box. So they have just such a. I'm really curious to see how that plays out. I don't have as strong of an opinion on it because the talent is so strong across the board. The beautiful thing about having that level of talent is you can try experiments like that and see how it goes. What do you think, Sirius?
I think that Brett Bielema is like hot and sweaty somewhere, and he doesn't know why at the thought of running a three tight end offense. But I think it depends on, you know, the tight ends that you have, because I think we're seeing more and more of these guys that are really kind of somewhere in between tight ends and wide receivers, and actually tight ends in college who have made the move to wide receiver in the pros, or even maybe a little bit more vice versa. Where they're kind of in-betweeners, you know, they're basically like bulky wide receivers more than they are the classic blocking tight end. So I think that really it depends on what your specific players are going to look like in terms of how that manifests itself on the field. The Oregon-Georgia game, I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. Interesting shift for Oregon, going from an offensive-minded coach to a defensive-minded coach. Georgia, on the other hand, has the benefit of, you know, losing a defensive coordinator, but they have a great defensive-minded coach as their head coach. Maybe kind of helps, you know, mitigate that to an extent. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, you got to put the money on Georgia as the defending national champs, but kind of like what we were talking about with the Kansas situation earlier. You got to look at it as how well does Oregon do compared to what you would expect? Because it's not one where you have to say, oh, they lost the game, therefore this is awful. Did they get blown out? Did Georgia do to them what Bama did to USC, you know, when Clay Helton was the head coach?
Oh, yeah.
Several years ago, right? Where they came out of the gate and they look confident for about 3 minutes. Versus if you can kind of hold your own a little bit, even if you lose by 15 or 20, that's kind of what I'm going to be looking for more in that game, necessarily than saying, now let's see if Oregon can keep it close or maybe even win.
Yeah, and Oregon has winnable games, I think, for the rest of their season. But that opener at, you know, versus Georgia in a quasi-neutral field in Atlanta, that is the one game I just can't give them any credit to win. I mean, I think they can beat anybody in the Pac-12. It's that open over there. And then their non-conference schedules, like, other than that, is Eastern Washington and BYU. So, I mean, those are winnable games. All of those are winnable games. But Georgia, no, I'm not. Especially the opening game. There's just too many questions. Georgia's going to have enough of what won last year there, just overall, to keep that from getting too. But, yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting to see how much they can – how long they can compete. Will it be like watching USC get melted down into some kind of ore in the first quarter of that game?
I would say I mostly worry about if they don't keep it close, how they bounce back from it the next week, because they are hosting an Eastern Washington team that was ranked pretty high for FCS last year, that has pulled off some upsets in the past. And we've seen kind of what the hangover effect from having that big marquee week one game can have on a team when they roll off of that and go in to face either a G5 team or even an FCS team the next week. You know, it's happened with Virginia Tech a few times, especially when you throw in the fact that they're playing their first game in Georgia and then hosting Eastern Washington and Oregon on the other side of the country the next week. So it's kind of a you've got some travel turnaround going on there too. You got to keep morale high coming out of it. And you also have to keep guys, you know, motivated and hopefully no injuries. Hopefully they're rested up and ready to play for that Eastern Washington game. So,
yeah, I would have said that sounds outrageous with Oregon, but then last year we saw Montana knock down Washington. So certainly, yeah, no, it
happens.
It happens. Hey, Duke,
the hangover effect is real.
Duke, before we let you go, what are your thoughts heading into that game?
Sorry, I lost you for a second. The Oregon-Georgia game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with a lot of your opinions said there. I'm not too worried about it exactly, but I was just looking ahead in the schedule for the Dogs. It's just going to be a pretty much you're just going to need a repeat of last year, get to the SEC championship. You have to be – can't have a loss going into it if you'd be considered for the playoffs, so – if you lose that game to Bama, and which I'm predicting it will be Bama. And also I'm curious to see what's going to happen with the defense, losing a lot of key players like N'Kobe Dean and Lewis Cine and obviously Walker. And then, so we'll just see, but I'm not too worried about Kirby, and I'm confident in Stetson again, because he really has developed a leadership role and a lot of respect on that team, which I didn't think he had before.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks, Duke.
Thank you.
Hey, Brennan, what's up? What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I know we already talked about one Kansas team, but I was wondering if you could talk about the K-State Wildcats. I honestly think they're pretty underrated coming into this year, and they can really compete for a Big 12 championship. You know, with Adrian Martinez coming over from Nebraska, they still have one of the best running backs, in my opinion, in the nation, in Deuce Vaughn. And their defense doesn't look too shabby. I really think that, you know, people talk about Baylor, Texas, Oklahoma, but I think people are forgetting about how good K-State is under Kleinman. And kind of guys, your opinion on the Wildcats there.
Well, I agree. Kleinman is, you know, a tremendous coach. You can't do what he did, somehow make North Dakota State even more terrifying in the FCS. When he took over, you know, so I agree. And I thought that was a great hire when Kansas State got him. It's interesting. They're kind of, They're one of the most unpredictable. Like, we were talking about how it was hard to predict where Nebraska was going to finish in the Big Ten. I think Kansas State's that team for me, at least in the Big 12. Maybe, gosh, I think they're maybe Kansas, probably maybe not Kansas, probably maybe Texas would be in that category where I really can't tell how they're going to do. But Kansas State, it's like, you're right. I mean, that you hit the big win was getting a new quarterback, and whether Adrian Martinez is going to be what, you know, if he's going to hit that next level with the Wildcats is an open question. I mean, I would like to see improvement. I don't think, you know, they had an 8-win season last year. I think that was great. I'd like to see them step up. I don't know if they'll hit 9, but gosh, this one's a tough one because I'm trying to think who their strongest wins are against. I mean, I'm trying to, I don't know. Do you happen to have the schedule in front of you, Sirius?
They got Missouri, Tulane, and South Dakota, or South Dakota, Missouri, and Tulane to start the season. So that's a relatively winnable slate, I would say. Missouri, yeah, sure, could be decent, but I think that they've got them at all three of those are at home too. Week 1, 2, 3. So I think the, you know, Mizzou on the road, I don't know that that's necessarily the biggest roadblock in the world. So beyond that, then it's just conference slate. So we kind of get back into the same problem we were talking about earlier with Kansas, that there's so many unknowns here with teams that have got, you know, new players, new coaches, you name it, how exactly it's all going to shake out.
And I agree with you. I think, you know, that slate is very optimistic for, I mean, you can be pretty optimistic. I mean, Missouri is by far the biggest question there. It's like unpredictable teams against unpredictable teams. I have no idea what Mizzou's going to look like next season. South Dakota should be a safer game, at least FCS. But, you know, Kansas State famously had that game with North Dakota State back in the day. So you never know when Kansas State was ranked in that game. Tulane, it hurts me to see Tulane still not be strong. I want to see Tulane be a dynamite G5 team because I just like New Orleans. I've visited that campus, talked with their sports information director, and I like their head coach. There's so much that should go wrong there, but it never seems to, and they always just seem to be a perpetual team that falls just short. But that's good for K-State, right? I mean, unfortunately, conference slate starts at Oklahoma, but which will be a real test real quick. And, you know, I guess if you're going to take Oklahoma, if you're going to challenge them, you know, on the road isn't the best, but getting them this season when they had that abrupt coaching change could be beneficial. I don't know if I would dare chalk that up as a chance of an upset, but if you're going to have a chance, I mean, this would be the Oklahoma team I would want compared to the last several seasons. And then we'll see again how they shake out against the other sort of middle pack contenders in the Big 12. But yeah, that was a good question. Gosh, it's so funny. We're getting a lot of the folks who have these teams that are sort of in the middle. You know, we've had Minnesota, we've had but you know, the good news is you know, you still play Kansas, right? I mean, that's also in the conference. Brendan, what are your thoughts heading into next season?
You know, I think the Wildcats, on defense, they get back Khalid Duke also, who is an NFL-caliber player coming off the edge. So I honestly think that they can pull off 9 wins, and if they can steal the game from Oklahoma or somebody, I think they could pull off a Big 12 championship.
You know, if it's going to happen, I mean, this is a great season for it because you have a chance. You know, Oklahoma State just lost their defensive coordinator. OU has a totally new slate of almost everything. I don't know that personally I'm as convinced as some people that Adrian Martinez is the level of QB that at least some Nebraska fans thought he was. I was a little skeptical personally, but we'll see. You know, it's a new system for him. And you've got a new offensive coordinator under Colin Klein, right? So, it'll be interesting to see what his offense looks like for K-State as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, Brendan. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Hey, Ray, what's up?
What's going on, man? What's going on? So I'll introduce kind of a new topic here. So I saw some buzz that Cudson Hard might get this might get the start over Quinn Ewers going into this season for Texas. Is that a situation where we see him have two transfers before even playing a snap just because of the emphasis that they've been putting on getting Arch Manning in their next class? I mean, it's kind of wild. It's like the Pandora's box. Like, you never know what's inside of it because you haven't seen this kid play at all. I don't know. That's just a thought. And then, you know, maybe what situations would be good for him. I'll hang up and listen.
It's like Tathan Martell 2.0, right? Just kind of
exactly.
constantly bouncing from. Honestly, the transfer portal, I will go down, you know, with the strongest conviction. The transfer portal is one of the most amazing things that's happened to college football, if only because that's how we found out that Tate Martell's actual first name was Tathan. That alone cements it as one of the best things that the NCAA ever came up with when it comes to the sport.
Oh, man. You know, Texas is under so much pressure right now, obviously, with the impending move to the SEC after this season. And Sark just, you know, I'm still surprised they hired Sarkisian, but, you know, with the amount of pressure that's on him. But he's a quarterback. He is someone who believes strongly in the quarterback position, being a former one and obviously being an offensive coordinator. Or an offensive assistant, then coordinator under, you know, all those strong USC teams. So I'm curious to see that. I know there's been criticism about that, the QB room over at Texas, and you know, bringing in yours was a huge deal. So it would be kind of and did that provoke Card to step up? I mean, I admit, it's too bad JD isn't here. JD's our absolute Texas dynamo. So we are a little short on our Texas knowledge today. But serious, where do you think this is going to lead?
You have to think that Sark's, with the pressure that he is under, and I mean, sure, you know, viewers is being drawn in with NIL money and boosters are saying you got to start this guy that we paid millions of dollars to, that kind of thing. But if you're Sark, you have to – the logical move would be you play the hot hand, right? Like, whichever quarterback you think you have the best chance of winning with, he gets the start because you can't really afford to screw up at this point, in my opinion. You know, you need to prove that you're worth the salary and that you actually know what you're doing. And winning cures everything. I mean, boosters may get mad that they're in a NIL guy is sitting on the bench. But if you can pull off 10 or 11 wins, you got to think they're going to shut up.
Oh, they absolutely would. I agree. I mean, they're going to be like, well, see, he knew exactly what he was doing. He brought in the motivation to get Card to step up or whatever.
Right. They'll invent the logic to go with it to show that they were, you know, in the right and it was, you know, all thanks to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I see no reason not to. You know, thanks for joining us, Ray. We really appreciate it. Hey, Nathan, what's up?
Oh, hey, I'm probably the worst person to go to. My question is simply about the New Mexico Lobos. Are we going to win a conference game this year? That's literally all I got for you.
Well, you know, it's so funny too. I was waiting to see the you know, was it going to be New Mexico or New Mexico State, you know? And trying to figure that out because I mean, New Mexico State, you know, it's curious to see how they're going to do a kill, but now New Mexico. All right. Well, the Lobos, obviously, gosh, they've been all over the place. So I know they're not favored to do very well this season. In fact, I think, gosh, where are they ranked? I think they're ranked towards the bottom. They haven't been doing great. I mean, they had like what? Gosh, two wins? No, it was three wins last year.
Three wins.
Yeah.
They beat Wyoming somehow.
Yeah, exactly. That's... Wyoming is the other. Hey, we're talking about unpredictable teams. That's Wyoming, but New Mexico, unfortunately, they are just not. They're not. I mean, I'm shocked at how bad they've become. I never thought of them as a bad team. And here they are, and they're the bottom of the – yeah, just looked up. They're the bottom. They're expected to be the bottom of the Mountain West. Now, I guess the question is, are there winnable games? I mean, New Mexico State, obviously, that's the big game. There's anything could go there. I mean, they start with Maine. That's plausible. We remember the Maine. sorry. There could be two games there. And UTEP, sort of a rival. I mean, I know it's not quite the same. I know. I think it's New Mexico State that considers them a bigger rival because they're really close to each other. But, gosh, who else is in that non-conference slate? LSU? Okay. Probably
yeah.
Give that one a pass.
Hold on. Time out. I came here to feel better. I don't really think this is helping at all.
Well, it depends.
Okay, Nathan, you did lead off with, can we win a conference game? So,
No, fair enough. If it's on me, no.
If it helps, so far, we've only been talking about the non-conference slate. So we haven't actually gotten to your question yet. So the LSU game is totally irrelevant to that.
Yeah, we're not like
– But you will be kings if you can beat Brian Kelly – and his family in LSU in Death Valley. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. I don't think it can happen.
If they met, yeah.
They have a snowball's chance in Baton Rouge.
Okay.
Let's
take a time out. Our only conference win last year was against Nevada. So can we at least beat Nevada this year? Come on. Somebody give me something to hope for.
Well, I think it's certainly possible. I mean, you know, there's going to be well, you're not playing Nevada this year.
Yeah. Let's look at that. Last year was Wyoming.
UNLV, that's a plus. It's at UNLV, but they, for whatever reason, just can't seem to put together a winning program despite every possible benefit that keeps falling in their lap. Being in Las Vegas, playing in Allegiant Stadium.
You've got Jeff Tedford making his return to Fresno State. So
Fresno State coming in.
Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tedford will eventually get Fresno State, you know, back to where it should be. That's still, I mean, not that they weren't bad last year, but I mean, you know, it's still, you're getting them in a transition year. Hosting San Diego State is tough, and hosting Boise State is tough, but at least you're getting them at home. You host Wyoming, so who knows? That's winnable, I guess. I mean, gosh, this is a, you know, I get your concern, and I understand it, and we respect it. But you know, the reason we watch the games is because of those upsets and because of the unpredictability of it. And I think, you know, ultimately, which is what you kind of, and I mean, I'm not saying you go back to, but I mean, when you're talking about a team, you want to see how they perform in those games and can they keep them competitive? Because if you get to the point where New Mexico, okay, they're not winning a ton of games, but you're seeing those close games against some of these opponents.
Eventually, yeah, you'll get one and you'll get over that hump. Like, you know, if you get enough swings at the plate with close games, eventually you are going to win one of them is usually how that works. You know.
I love how none of this sounds all that optimistic. I agree with
no,
you.
No, none of this is helping me.
Well, I guess that's our takeaway to you as a New Mexico fan. Godspeed.
Yep.
And I hope we're wrong for your sake. You know, I mean, because everyone loves those teams that you know, go in there completely expected to – yeah, I mean, that was UTSA. I don't think anyone expected them to be that great this season, and then, you know, there you go. So I'm not necessarily expecting that level of victory, but it's possible. So
I think that there are some teams on there that you could potentially pull off a win against.
So I just want to – just so I can clarify, the advice is – just don't lose hope. Like, that's the worst thing advice ever, because I will literally cling to every game now.
You know, that's...
We just want you to have fun, Nathan. That's the important thing.
As long as everyone's having a good time. That's
just enjoy the experience.
I've literally spent my adult life telling everybody I'm just a general college football fan because I'm a New Mexico fan. And, like, the only thing I got is just be like, no, I just really like college football. So you don't see me live and die with every University of New Mexico game and just cry at the end of every evening.
As a Vandy fan, I 100% understand that. My emotional well-being, because we get those questions on the subreddit of, you know, for teams of fans of bad teams, how do you live with yourself during the season? And it's easy because my emotional well-being has nothing to do with Vanderbilt football.
No, exactly.
If we win a game, it is a pleasant surprise, and I'm ecstatic. If we lose, yeah, we kind of expected it.
That's exactly right. I'm like, oh, well, we're terrible. That's kind of what you expect. When we win a game, I'm ecstatic. Like, my kids know they're going to go, we're going to go out to eat, and Daddy's going to have too much to drink. Like, that's how it's every time the University of New Mexico wins one game. Luckily for them, it only happens once to three times a year, so we're good.
Oh, man. So maybe it's pretty good. I don't know. You know, and it's so funny too. I've been on the opposite side of that scale, where it's like even every little loss just kind of stabs you in the heart, and then you feel like you're gonna just dress in black for that following week, like you're in mourning. So you
it's know, like the stories where like one Alabama fan shot another Alabama fan because they didn't win big enough that day.
I will tell you what, I'm so grateful I'm not a fan of a really successful football team because I don't live and die with every loss. I'm just like, oh, we lost. That's supposed to happen. Congratulations. So now it's just like when there's a win, it's like it's a big party. When there's a loss, it's like, oh, it's just a regular Saturday. I here we go.
But yeah, in a way to look at it, one of the college football cultures I think that has a healthy approach to it is sort of if you talk to a lot of the fans of HBCUs, the historically black colleges and universities that are mostly at FCS and D2, it's like it's not even about the game, it's about the tailgate and getting having a good time outside of the game. It's like if you watch some of the funny videos that folks have made kind of parodying it, it's like, oh, the game, oh, I'll go in later. It's all about the tailgate and having fun and enjoying yourself outside. So yeah, it's a way to look at it. You know, it's fun.
HBCU Saturdays are band concerts where a football game happens to break out.
Well, yeah, it's funny.
If you've ever seen an HBCU band, it is 100% justified. Very few teams can match the product that their bands put on the field.
Right, and I played years ago at a very bad D3 football school. So like we were terrible. So we lost every week and nobody really cared. Like it was just like, hey, we're just doing the best we can. Just a bunch of guys out here doing the best we can. But
just a bunch of guys being dudes.
Yeah. So no, I the one thing about being a New Mexico fan, University of New Mexico fan, is I don't live and die with every win or loss. But hey, if we could win maybe one conference game this year, like that would make me feel pretty good. And we were 3-9 last year. If we could maybe go 4-8, like that's improvement to me. Like I just, and the fact that Rocky Long is still on the staff, like, okay, you know what? I feel nostalgic about that. So we'll, you know what? I'll hold on to that and we'll go from there.
Well, if New Mexico wins a conference game, you got to call back in the fall in the Tuesday after.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I have to say Rocky Long, he loves New Mexico. I know he does. And, I mean, I had a chance to talk to him a couple times at Mountain West Media Days, and you could tell his departure was a very bittersweet thing. The first time, you know, when he was the head coach to head over to SDSU. So I agree. It's nice. Having him there is a huge deal, and I'm glad to see him back there.
Well, it's funny because as a New Mexico native, we love him. Like, I know very few people that don't just love Rocky Long. Even though we could argue about whether he was successful or not as the coach of New Mexico, we just love the man. So yeah, no, I totally get that. And for real, like you said, every interview, he's in love with the program and the state. And so big Rocky Long guy. But yeah, if we could just win maybe two conference games this year and just get lucky on a couple of these close ones, I'll be okay.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us, Nathan.
Thanks, y'all.
Reed, what's up?
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing this evening? Nathan, shout out. True college football fan.
representing the majority of us. We aren't Alabama alums, so we get to love our teams for who they are. Couple hot takes and then a real question. Mizzou will beat K-State. Mizzou will win 8 games this year or more. And real question, how quickly do you all think USC is going to start contending for a national championship?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I personally, and I'm jumping into this because I have the most, you know, personal stake in it, you know, even though honestly, the longer I've been away from Los Angeles, the less I feel of a USC fan. I don't think it's, you know, and also just the way the program was under Clay Helton kind of helped, you know, get me past some of my hangups. But I don't think this year at any chance. I mean, you'd have to really have drunk the USC Kool-Aid to think they're going to have any real shot this year. Maybe in year 3, I could see them being dominant. And it isn't just because that's the – I mean, I remember with Pete Carroll, that's how long it took him to take. Because I remember when Pete Carroll took over USC, USC was like the biggest, you know, I mean, it was basically what it was now. It's this giant team that recruits well and doesn't know how to do anything with it and just, you know, is worrying about, you know, then the star recruits that used to be the ones they would get getting poached by up-and-coming programs or other major powers around the country. So it took him 3 years to turn it around, and he had a really empty cupboard where I do think, to some extent, Lincoln Riley has probably a stronger roster heading in. But I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know, you know, obviously taking over from Bob Stoops and keeping the Oklahoma machine running, we're going to see if that was also a big factor in how well he did. I know that would absolutely thrill a lot of Oklahoma fans if he just couldn't get anything going at USC. But realistically, I would be more confident in year 3 being a year where we'd see that USC team get where he'd want it. Possibly year 2, I would be shocked beyond reason if it – I mean, I'd be pleasantly surprised for my own selfish reasons. But, you know, I could see them taking some licks this season. I could see them finishing not at the top of the Pac-12. I could see them taking several losses to the glee of everybody. And I get it. That if you're a USC fan or if you're an Alabama fan or if you're a Ohio State fan or if you're a fan of these teams, you're used to the fact that when you lose, everyone loves it. Texas is another great example of that. So that's my thought on it. I think year 3 would be realistic if it's going to happen. And I'm not, while I was thrilled that hire happened, I was surprised, almost as surprised as I was with Brian Kelly then going to LSU. You know, I'm not necessarily sold on whether or not he'll be able to take USC back to the top, because it's still a difficult task. It's still, you know, USC, maybe the boosters are going to step up. They certainly have the boosters. No one ever expect. People don't, and as I've said this before in previous shows, USC is just famous for having tons of rich, not necessarily rich for being intelligent, but rich for being, you know, entrepreneurial, you know, rich alumni who will dump money if you really need it. So maybe this will be what they need to kind of also bring up their facilities, because even under the Pete Carroll years, USC was famous for being behind the other programs in terms of overall facilities. The program I think that is most analogous to that is Miami in Florida. They are also famously like, hey, it's Miami, we're awesome. And, you know, they kind of would always sort of not have the facilities that some of the other programs would have. And to maybe an extent, that started to hurt them as, you know, Clemson and those other programs got coaches that could win. And then, you know, they could also show off facilities that were superior. So I'm curious to see where Riley takes USC over that. How about you, Sirius?
I have no idea, but it probably is not going to be fast enough for a lot of USC boosters, considering the money that they've been spending. Regardless if that's 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, or even if he loses like one game in the first 4, probably you're gonna start hearing some grumblings just because that's what boosters do. I'll be interested to see how the season goes, because
I don't think USC boosters are quite that nutty. I mean, they're nutty. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it. And gosh knows, before, you know, in the olden days, before, you know, we had RCFB for talk, and I'm not saying we're the best ever, but I mean, you know, I remember I got so tired of going on, you know, team fan boards, you know, for USC fan. I mean, because you see that on every fan board, especially the bigger programs where you're just like, how, dude, you know, you read what somebody writes and you're like, how are you even, are you connected to reality anymore? I mean, either, you know, every win, you know, how can we ever lose again? Or can we, you know, or you get the fans that every little loss is like the end of the world and you got to fire everybody. Setting that group aside, who I think are not really, you know, the people who are ever going to make a worthwhile decision for on behalf of the team, I think the boosters at USC are a little more patient, especially because I think of the splash of the name. I think they'll give him a couple of seasons before. I think year three, if things don't turn around, it's going to get hard in that for that program. I mean, the pressure will be on, but I think
when I said grumblings, you know, it's kind of meant, you know, just people not happy that they thought it would be an immediate, you know, we hired an elite coach, we paid NIL money to bring in star players, you know, star Heisman contender quarterback, Biletnikoff winning wide receiver, you know, we've got all these pieces for you, now go and win. And, you know, they're paying him a lot more than they did Clay Helton, because they were surprisingly patient with Clay Helton. So I kind of wonder if, you know, the stakes are a little bit higher money-wise this time around. But I don't think anybody's going to be calling for his head after two seasons. But I think people will be a little bit let down by the fact if he doesn't come straight out of the gate as at least a Pac-12 championship contender in the first season. You know, if he goes out and they win like 8 games, I think people are going to be kind of, not what we're looking for. Pressure's on for year two.
I'll say this much. Game two for USC is going to be a big moment for them because, you know, they open with Rice at home, not worried about that game, but they play at Stanford. And for whatever reason, I don't know why this started, but they, in the last 10 years, it seems like they've moved that Stanford game to being in like in that early season slate. And Stanford and USC are rivals. They're not as passionate rivals as UCLA or Notre Dame, but that game is loaded with antagonism between those two programs. Actually, as I've said before, the late great writer Beano Cook once put it best, Cal and Stanford are rivals, but both hate USC. So they're going to go play at Stanford Stadium. If Stanford always inexplicably will have USC's number, even in sometimes seasons where USC's otherwise quite strong, I think that's going to be the game where we're going to see if Lincoln Riley, how ready they are, is in week two at Stanford. And to a lesser extent, the following week, even though we were trying to give the New Mexico guy hope, Fresno State with Jeff Tedford seems exciting. I mean, they were decent last year. And now they brought Tedford in, and he's a big passionate fan of Fresno State. It's his program in a lot of ways. And they would love nothing more than to beat USC again, because that was one of their biggest defining moments, was the Freedom Bowl back in the day when they upset a USC program. So, I mean, that game also, you're going to have Fresno State coming in full blast to try and take out the Trojans. So I still remember, and I mean, the other famous USC-Fresno State game was 2005 when they nearly took out the Reggie Bush-Matt Leinart team before Reggie Bush just came on fire in the final quarter and put that game out of reach. You know, so Lincoln Riley's walking into a hell of a first three games there. Rice will be probably easy, but those next two, we're going to see real quick how much progress he's made there. But yeah, I agree. It's going to be probably more of a week three thing. And oh my goodness, we're at 10:20. I think we're going to have to go ahead and wrap up. We typically wrap up after an hour, but there were so many great questions here. And I just wanted to thank all of you for joining us. And Reed, thank you for giving us that great question to end on. And thanks to all of you who called. We got to talk about almost every, I think we talked about all the P5. We even got a good G5 question in there. So I just wanted to thank all of you on behalf of myself, on behalf of Sirius and JD, who couldn't be here tonight. Thanks for joining us. We do these every Tuesday night on RCFB Talk. And